The following episode of At the Root of It has been brought to you by TechServe and the Lower East Side Ecology Center's 8th Annual After the Holidays e-waste events. The Ecology Center is rolling out its 8th Annual After the Holidays e-waste events with 10 events in January 2011 to help you responsibly dispose of all your unwanted or broken gadgets. Help meet their goal of collecting 100 tons this January by spreading the word to your friends and neighbors. For more information, you can visit www.lesecologycenter.org.
Hi, and welcome to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network on the 14th of December. Snowy day finally here has come, so we're going to start today's show with the Week in Wine recap. And in latest news, Democrat and Chronicle reports that support of wine sales in grocery stores edges up to 59%. A majority of New Yorkers questioned in a new Siena Research Institute poll favors the sale of wine in grocery stores. 59% of the 806 registered voters surveyed support the sale of wine in supermarkets and grocery stores, 39% opposed the change, and 2% had no opinion. The findings were slightly more positive for advocates of the proposal than the 56% who supported it in a Siena College poll back in April. A coalition of grocery and convenience stores this year failed to persuade the state legislature to allow the Depression-era law regiving that wine and spirits be sold in licensed liquor or wine stores. So this is a story that we've been following and new findings out, so I'm not sure how everyone feels about that, but please call in with any comments or suggestions. And in the market feed, a chain of California-themed wine bars launching across Asia will open its first branch in January in Hong Kong. California Vintage, whose backers include 22 California partner wineries and a Hong Kong-based importer, will debut in the central neighborhood of the city. It will offer 80 wines by the glass from roughly $5 to $44, and all wines come from the partner wineries are family-owned and small production, including, amongst others, Fritz, Hope, Peachy Canyon, and Tierra Roja. California Vintage plans to open 20 outlets across Asia in the next 5 years. China, Korea, Singapore, and Taiwan, amongst the different cities. The U.S., including California, is the fourth most represented exporter to Hong Kong. Nevertheless, this group thinks that the comparatively poor showing and aim to further give exposure and appreciation to California wine in Asia. After the short break, we'll be back with my guest this afternoon, Karen Ulrich. This is your host, Aaron Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network. Thank you to our producer and DJ, Jack Ainsley, this afternoon for that good tune. And to my guest for joining us, Karen Ulrich of Imbibe New York. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Thanks for coming out today.
Thank you.
We had the chance to just enjoy an awesome pizza at Roberta's, which was pesto, artichokes,
mushrooms. Absolutely, yeah. Delicious.
So we're going to talk a bit about Imbibe New York to begin today's show. Karen is a writer and lives here in Manhattan, in Harlem, and wanted to tell our listeners a little bit about what you do at the site.
I started Imbibe New York about 2.5 years ago, because I was struck by the wine bars that were opening every week in New York City. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like this was a site that could continue for about 10 years with weekly postings with new wine bars every week, because okay. there are so many.
Yeah.
And as I became more immersed in the wine community, I kind of expanded it to include wine events and tastings and things like that around the city.
So it's for both trade and for the public?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Where one can access photographs and comments about wine bars around the city, the wines they offer, what kind of glassware they use, what the ambiance is like, you know, which can help you make a choice. Is it a date place? Is it a, you know, a groupang place?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it for wine, or is it just, you know, a cheap place to tip them back? You know?
Sure. Do you ever veer off course? I mean, actually did not realize that it was solely based on wine bars and that kind of experience at night. So do you ever veer off and go towards other sort of food or wine establishments?
Beer.
Beer, okay.
Beer sometimes, yep. But also include local wineries, whether the Hudson Valley or Long Island, anything in New York State, trade events, tastings. We also have a Imbibe New York Wine Club, where we meet once a month,
okay.
and commit to trying different varietals and pairing those with food. And so I'll cover that as well.
Great.
Yeah.
And your background, as you mentioned, you kind of, before the show, hadn't always been in the wine industry. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your pull to it and what you were doing prior.
Yeah. I approached the blog as a writer first and as a wine specialist second. I did study creative nonfiction at the New School, earned my MFA there, and studied photography years ago at School of Visual Arts. So this seemed like a perfect platform to marry the two. I did WSET certification courses in studying wine as well,
mm-hmm.
To help provide the, you know, the base of knowledge
sure.
necessary, and just love New York so much. So anything and everything about New York City, you know, every little nook and cranny, I just take it into my lap.
And it sounds like you've been living here for quite a while.
Yeah. We're not going to say how long.
But okay, that's okay. Well, if you studied at the New School and...
wouldn't live anywhere else, that's okay. for sure. Yeah.
Nice. And where are you from originally?
I was born in Long Island and grew up
okay.
in New Hampshire,
right
but
on.
Always knew New York was it.
Well, I'm curious to hear a little bit about that kind of shift from your experience as a writer to then writing online, because it is a different medium. And with this... increase of blogs in the blogosphere these days, how have you understood, you know, content to be adapted for online media?
One thing that inspired me to start a blog was not just a trip to California where I really got wine for the first time and then studying those classes at the International Wine Center, but it's a way to avoid the gatekeepers. You can be your own gatekeeper and still have a daily audience, whether it's 5 people or 100 or 1,000. I had studied creative nonfiction and then wrote a novel and wrote a few first drafts of other books and wanted to approach, sort of got into wine writing as a different approach to getting through the door, something that was more in my own hands as opposed into the hands of others. And in the blogosphere, it seems like everyone, of course, maybe not has the same intent, but there are no gatekeepers, which, you know, could be a beautiful thing
right.
or, you know, a curse. You know?
Right, right.
So I try to make it more of a literary wine blog as opposed to just, you know, standard wine reviews of bottles, because how much of that can you read and how interesting is
right.
it really?
Yeah.
You know.
So do you think that in terms of quality, I mean, you're obviously having the background as a writer prior to starting your blog, and do you think the quality has changed in just terms of people's expectations of writing? I know it's a little bit more of an academic sort of question, but
mm-hmm.
have we become too accustomed to this very casual sort of communication as opposed to print media?
I think so. I mean,
yeah.
I do think that, you know, a lot of bloggers tend to post for count as opposed to content.
Mm-hmm.
That if you put up, you know, 3 or 4 posts a week, then you'll increase your readership. And this does work. It does
right.
have an effect. I've seen it. But are these necessarily the blog posts that everyone wants to read for the sake of literature or content or,
mm-hmm.
you know, stimulation of the senses or intellect? Or creativity, you know, I don't know. Everyone has to answer that
yeah.
themselves.
Sure, sure.
But as we see print media folding, and now instead of gatekeepers, there's just no gates at all. You know?
Exactly.
There's no structure. There's
Anarchy.
No foundation. Total. It's total chaos. So a lot of interesting things do come out of this, but I do think that it's helped foster a community where maybe people might not have found or a place to flock to without this.
Mm-hmm.
So it has enabled a lot of that, which is really great.
Yeah, that actually was about my next question, which was kind of the community of bloggers, because as you read other people's blogs, you see, you know, the blog role and people, obviously,
mm-hmm.
you are a reader. So you're going to, you were mentioning prior to the show, too, a blog of a writer in Paris or France?
In France, yeah. Wine Terroir,
yeah.
Yeah, wonderful blog.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of that, it's less competitive in some ways. Do you find it less competitive as more of a kind of resource of community in terms of the wine or food blogs?
It seems like there's such a niche. Like, even though we're attending the same trade events and perhaps writing about the same things,
mm-hmm.
the styles of writing and the approaches of each blog are so different
yeah.
that I don't know if I would call it competitive. It's just different angles reaching to the same, you know, it's like the octopus with 100 arms as opposed to 8, you know. There's just many different angles
yeah.
which one can reach the same center.
Sure.
And
the different voice that responds differently to different people. And
exactly, yeah.
Plenty of enthusiasts out there, so there's a large readership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very, very mm-hmm. large readership indeed, yes.
So amongst the some of the other blogs that you read, you mentioned Wine Terroir. Yeah. And obviously your own.
Yeah.
Do you read any other sort of publications regularly in the wine community?
Dr. Vino is obviously great. You know, his pieces are short and they inspire a lot of conversation and it brings up some fun news tidbits.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Guy is interesting. He does a lot of stuff at home, cooking and wine, but I like his approach and sensibility to it.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then for wine bars, I mean, given that they have grown and you started this site 2 years ago after having lived in the city and seeing this little spurt of them, do you find that they've kind of become capped at this stage with respect to creativity?
No. In fact, I want more.
Okay.
I still want more. I mean, there's still so many out there. I still don't know them all.
Yeah.
I haven't time to visit them all because I, you know, post once a week with, you know, real life obligations,
mm-hmm.
allowing only that. But, you know, as we had talked about before, I think there are a lot of wine bars that, you know, serve 10 kinds of wine by the glass and call themselves a wine bar, even if they're all wines of the same palate or,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they're not necessarily good. And so there are, you know, that seems to be the majority. There are some that specialize in, you know, really great wines like, you know, Terroir or, you know, Gottino is really nice for Italian wines.
Yeah, I love Gottino's selection.
Ten Bells
yeah.
has a great selection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are a handful of these around the city, but I want more.
Okay, well.
Because it's such a wonderful opportunity to be able to go and taste these things by the glass and really expand your knowledge and to be able to have conversations with, you know, the person behind the bar or your waiter or waitress and to learn more about it. The Counting Room in Williamsburg is another really nice spot that has some good selections.
Oh, I haven't been there.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Have you been to Enfora, Joey Campanale's place?
No.
No.
Not yet.
Because that has a very interesting selection and also a little narrative, you know, behind
mm-hmm.
each wine to kind of give you a place and context of where it comes from and
yes.
who's growing it.
Yes, and that's so important,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, especially as, you know, lovers of local food and going to the market and, you know, you get to meet the farmers or, you know, going to the North Fork and talking to the winemakers. Like, we want to hear the stories
sure.
of who's
yeah.
producing the wines and how it came to be about and, yeah,
it's a
how
source
they came to create the wines.
Yeah.
Yeah, it provides context, and it's interesting conversation, and it helps you remember.
Yeah. What was your recent, I didn't get a chance to read your entire post on Eataly experience, but I was in there on Sunday for a girlfriend of mine who decided to do her birthday brunch where we'd all meet at Eataly, and she would give us a section to go tackle and find the products that would then buy and take back to her apartment and cook a little dish. So it was really fun, and you're like, wow, this place has everything. And you got kind of drawn into the piazza for a second and like, ooh, can we just call it here? And I mean, what was your experience like?
It's amazing. Yeah, went in and, you know, it was my first time there and I had a hard time navigating. I'm like, okay, where? I was meeting a friend of mine and I'm texting her. I'm like, okay, where do I go?
What section are you?
What's going on? You know? But then once you get the lay of the land, I mean, it's astounding. And one of the greatest things for me is you can actually shop, it seems, with a glass of wine in your hand. And I don't know about you, but I mean, if you go shopping in Whole Foods or Fairway, like right. What else drives you to drink? I mean,
that's exactly.
Like, such horrible experiences. You know, by the time you get out, you're like, oh God, please, you know, there should be someone handing out glasses of wine as you exit the door.
No, instead
you know?
You're getting like thermal coats to go into that cold room.
Yes.
Which is one of the funniest supermarket experiences I've ever had.
At Fairway Uptown. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, but at Eataly, you can, I mean, I saw women walking around with glasses of wines in their hand, and I was like, oh my God, this
Brilliant.
Is it. This
yeah.
is the solution, is you know? So that's enough to bring me back time and again.
Great. Nice.
And I actually ended up doing a photo essay on it because it's such a visual delight in there that I felt that that was the best way to show their offerings.
Did you post that as well?
Or yeah,
is that,
yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's very little text and then mostly photographs on this last post. Yeah, because it's just so stunningly beautiful and I want everything in there. And, you know, it's fun. And
I was in there when I was in there on Sunday. I went over to the produce section and they had raisins like on the vine.
Oh, my God.
I was like, ooh, I don't know that I've ever actually seen those for sale. You know,
yeah, like, I have not. That's amazing. And the mushrooms and the cookware and, all of it. Truffles.
All good stuff.
Yes.
Well, on that note, we're taking a short break and please stay tuned. And my guest, Karen Ulrich from ImbibeNewYork.com. Listening to Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Erin Fitzpatrick, on At the Root of It. And we're broadcasting live today out of Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'm here with my guest today, Karen Ulrich from Imbibe New York. And we just wrapped up the previous segment, talk a little bit about the shift in the industry of writing from print to online, as Karen is a writer. And gonna switch gears here because you're also a vegetarian.
Indeed. Or pescatarian. You can't live without oysters.
Okay. Is that the only seafood that you eat?
There's a few other seafoods in there, but oysters are.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. I'm very happy to hear that. Now, how do you feel about that rule where you're only supposed to eat oysters in a month that ends in ER? Have you heard that?
I have heard that, yes. I understand the reasoning behind it, but if I could eat oysters daily, I would.
Nice. So you were telling me a little bit about that piece that you had written about Long Island oysters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you work with Mike Ozinski at all? Isn't he the oyster man out there in North Fork?
No, this was with oyster farmer on the Shinnecock Indian Reservation.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I just worked with John there. He has his own business. There's the oyster farm of the Shinnecock Reservation, and then he branched out and started his own. So, yeah, the piece was about him and his farm and how it came about and the struggles that the reservation initially went through trying to,
harvest.
To the different stages of oyster farming that they experimented with until finally finding this niche.
And are they still operating today in a good way?
Absolutely. And I did that piece for Edible East End, and it's had a very positive effect on his business. He's doing well, I've heard.
Oh, that's great.
It is great.
Is he farming several different types of oysters?
Just one. Most of the oysters out there do tend to be Blue Point, even though they have different names for them. They do tend to, all be...
Blue Point. Right. Yeah. Right. And what do you like to drink with oysters? Different moods, I'm sure. But
yeah, Muscadet is a great go-to. Chablis works. Any white wine with a high acidity and minerality or salinity. I love white wines that taste like oyster brine.
Yeah.
There are a few of them. And,
definitely.
There are Muscadets that taste like that, which are great.
Yeah.
And so anything like that. Rosé.
Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning earlier you like a rosé from the North Fork quite a bit as well. Which one's that?
Yeah, Croteau Vineyards out in South Hold. They do some really, really lovely rosés. One of them, I think it's 318 is the varietal. It very much tastes between the sheets, let's say. It has a lovely, very sensual nose to
that.
It, which is, that's an opener for sure.
Cool. So then aside from oysters, going back to just vegetarian dishes and pairings on that note, I've talked a little bit about this on the show, just with respect to most people think about pairing proteins with wine. And, you always hear those classic pairings that involve a meat or a fish or poultry. And then the vegetable, which is so dynamic, gets often overlooked.
Yes,
so,
nobody cares.
No one cares.
It's so funny. I mean, if you go to all the standard traditional literature, white wine. Well, I don't want to always drink white wine with my vegetables, especially in the dead of winter. And, the tannins of red wine, it's true. They do need the animal fat to cut them and complement them. And while I don't have a lot of personal experience with that, I think that there are so many red wines that pair really, really well with vegetarian dishes, everything from root vegetables to grains, just a lot of great winter fare. And they do tend to get overlooked or unmentioned, which is such a shame. Thank God in New York, one doesn't have to worry about being a vegetarian because you don't have to go to vegetarian restaurants. There are
plenty of options.
Every place you go.
Do you find that at wine bars too? I mean, we always have the option of cheese, but is there enough kind of variety?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've never, ever had a problem in the, 20 years plus that I've been a pescatarian. Once you leave the city, however.
Right. Exactly.
It's like bread and cheese at the supermarket. But there are a lot of really great red wine options to pair.
And do you often think about the sauce that the vegetable is being cooked in, and then you think about the wine that you're going to pair with it later?
It could be the sauce, or it could be the foundation ingredients themselves, because I do think that our tastes in food inform the wines that we like. And I tend to, and I have other vegetarian friends who feel the same, I tend to gravitate towards wines that are very earthy, high in acidity, low in tannins, kind of light bodied, where maybe fruit takes a back seat unless it's something like, you know, Beaujolais Village.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a little bit more old world, it sounds like, in terms
definitely.
Of your palette.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. For me, yeah, it has to be old world. There's a few things, mm-hmm. you know, Long Island has some nice wines.
Sure.
And there's a few things in California, but for the most part, yeah, definitely old world. Because I feel that the bigger wines with the high alcohol content and the, you know, the fruit jamminess definitely needs meat to accompany them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what about like any sort of higher acidity red wines from like Zinfandel, for instance, and some sort of like spicy sort of, because oftentimes you think spicy and you're only thinking like white wines as a pairing, but mm-hmm. I actually quite like some spicy dishes with red wines too. And mm-hmm. one of them tends to be like a Zin or something with a little bit of a higher acidity to kind of quell that spice.
Mm-hmm. Or some black pepper notes.
Yeah,
There are some Zins that I like, but they do tend to be a little bit too big for me. You know, it's so hard. One thing I find that like the more wine you drink and the more you learn, the less you like, you know? So now it's like, then you become the impossible guest, you
right.
know? And you're like, well, I brought my own.
Of course. I know. It's one of those things people show up. Well, I didn't bring you wine because I didn't know what to bring.
Exactly.
You
exactly.
Like, no, bring me wine. I want to taste.
But I do find that red wines from northern regions tend to work really well because they're cooler, and so the alcohol content tends to be lower, mm-hmm. and the grapes haven't had as much time to ripen, and the sugars aren't as high, which leads to the lower alcohol content, and so they're... without fruit dominating the entire palate, it leaves more room for the other elements to breathe, like minerality or earthiness or
right.
brininess or, you know, whatever it is. And fruit can take a back seat to these other tasting notes, which
yeah,
is,
definitely.
I love. Yeah.
Now, we're a little ways away, considering it's, I don't know, what is it now, 10 days away from the holiday, but do you have any thoughts as to what you might prepare for your holiday meals?
Yeah, I don't know. Because Christmas I'll be spending with the family, so I'm not sure, you know, what will be prepared for that. I'm sure I'll do some side dishes.
Yeah.
And then New Year's tends to be, you know, there's a crew of us that get together and we either go out to dinner or cook and prepare. And so we haven't decided on the menu yet. There's usually oysters involved in that.
I was going to say. So. Sounds like a perfect layup right there.
You got to start off on the right note. So yeah, so that stuff will be determined. And, you know, as we play along, not quite there yet.
Cool. And we'd love to point our listeners as well to your website for those who haven't been on it yet. So if you could share what that is.
It's www.imbibenewyork.com.
And anything upcoming that you'd like to share about with them or to be continued in the new year?
Yeah, I kind of play it as I go, depending on what's going on, what events, what social occasions. I mean, the great thing about the blog is that it's also a commitment to my meeting my friends to drink wine and discover
uh-huh.
new wine bars. So, so we kind of play that as we roll along from week to week and leave it open to,
excellent.
You know, yeah, schedule.
Friends are lucky to have you to help them, guide them through the city. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. It was
Thank
really
you
fun
so
to
much.
Talk to you.
Really
and,
lovely.
Cool. Hope to have you on again.
Thank you.
And thanks to our producer, Jack Ainsley, for the show today, and to our listeners for joining. See you next week. Signing off.